Can you give me a specific example of an experience that you've had working in the Iowa House that you believe has prepared you to be a U.S. member of Congress?
Oh, actually, numerous ones. I would say probably the biggest one would be probably the whole issue of making the very passing the civil rights bill for the LGBT and protecting the marriage equality ruling when it came down from the Iowa Supreme Court. And the reason I say that is those two issues, one was the expansion of civil rights, but the other one was a civil rights issue as well. And making the decision not to allow any constitutional changes, I knew there was going to be a lot of political pressure from the Republican Party, and I knew there would be a lot of people in the Democratic Party that were uncomfortable with me taking the strong position I did with Senator Gronstall. But I think it was the right thing to do, and it was about doing what's right versus today's argument of doing what's politically expedient. And so I made the decision that I thought was the right thing to do, and that was to protect people's civil rights.
You're campaigning to join Congress at a time when its approval ratings are some of the lowest in history, hovering in the low to mid-teens in many cases. How do you think we got to this point?
Well, I think one of the things that I have been able to do is I think the reason the numbers are so low for Congress at this point has a lot to do with the fact that there's a lot of gridlock. And I have a history of working across party lines in the legislature. During the 1990s, I'll never forget, I worked on the Hawkeye Trust Fund, which created a fund. Republicans were in control. We had a Republican governor the first year and then a Democratic governor the next year. But we created the Hawkeye Trust Fund so that money that went into the health care program for children we knew was going to be spent on health care for kids. And so we were able to get that passed. I was able to talk to Republicans, and they agreed the most important thing to do was to protect the rights of children getting access to health care. And so we were able to pass that. But in addition to that, too, I worked with the former Speaker of the House before I became Speaker was Christopher Rance. When he was the Speaker pro tem and I was the ranking Democrat on the Appropriations Committee, neither one of our communities could pass a bond referendum. So we came up with the one-cent sales tax bill. That was a bipartisan effort. There were Democrats for it and against it, just like there was Republicans. But we were able to work in very much of a bipartisan fashion to make sure that we could address infrastructure needs for our schools. It is now statewide, and when you take a look at the different communities, whether they're large communities or small, it's addressed overcrowding issues in the urban centers. But in rural areas, the single most important thing for a community to have is whether it's an elementary, middle school, or high school, is the ability to have a school that's updated and modern and adds vibrancy to the local community. We were able to get that passed, and I worked with Republicans to get that done, and we passed it without knowing whether Governor Branstad would sign or veto the bill.
So can you give me an example of an area of federal policy where you can imagine compromising across party lines?
Well, I think one of the things that, I'll work with on the federal level, I'll work with Republicans, but there's certain things I won't do. I will work with Republicans. There's the argument of changes that need to be done to the Affordable Care Act. As long as we keep the current program intact and we guarantee people, the current 8 million Americans, have access to health insurance and we expand those programs, I'll be willing to work with Republicans to tweak the law so that they are able to expand health. I'm sorry, I'm watching a semi right now as it tries to take out a light.
Oh, goodness.
I'm sorry. And it looks like he is stuck. It looks like he's going to make it. But anyways, what I was going to say was I think that's a program that I think most people in America will agree the Affordable Care Act is here to stay. We need to see if we can work on areas where we can tweak the law, maybe change the taxes on it or increase the ability for people to have access to health insurance without drastically changing the program. I think that's an area where even some Republicans are starting to admit that that's a possibility.
What do you think is the one thing you can do in Congress to help create jobs in Iowa?
Well, I think there's a number of things that we can do to help create jobs. The single most important thing when it comes to creating jobs is making sure that people have the good education system that they need that ties their education with the jobs that are out there available today. I think when you take a look at our community college system, we've got to, first of all, make sure that the Pell Grant's well-funded, so kids that are from low-income homes have the ability to get access to higher education, especially given the skill sets in science, technology, engineering, and math, so that those students can get access to, one, a good education, two, not be knee-deep in debt once they're finishing school, and then along with that, making sure that we get the education in the areas where students know they'll be able to go out and find good-paying jobs. We have programs currently in eastern Iowa where there's these CNC programs where the incomes are paying between $15 and $25 an hour. And some of these programs, the CNC program is a 9-month completion program. We need to make sure that students get access to those types of programs, expand those opportunities so businesses know that the skill sets are there with the students that are graduating so they can fill their needs. But then along with that, making sure that they get into those types of positions so that they have a good job and they can raise a family on it.
So it sounds like what you're saying is make sure there's a prepared workforce and jobs will come.
Yeah, well, it's not just a prepared workforce so jobs will come. A lot of the jobs are here already, and part of the problem is finding the skill sets that employers are looking for from employees. So I think setting up an education system so that it meets those needs. The community colleges do a good job now, but we need to make sure that that continues to be a very high priority and make sure that at the federal level, we're making sure that those types of programs are out there and the financial assistance for students to be able to go to school so that they aren't mired in a lot of debt.
A March Iowa poll shows 65% of those polled support an increase in the minimum wage. Would you support a minimum wage increase?
Well, as Speaker of the House, I raised the minimum wage from up to its current level of $7.25 an hour back in 2007, and we did it 2 years before the federal government did. And this year in the legislature, I was the lead legislator to introduce raising the minimum wage to $10.10 an hour here at Iowa. So the answer is yes. I would support raising the minimum wage to $10.10 an hour. It's a huge issue. It helps families become self-sufficient. And I think the big part that you have to remember about this as well is 28,000 Iowans that are currently receiving SNAP benefits or food stamps, as they're known, 28,000 Iowans would go off of food stamps. This helps make families more self-sufficient. They're able to take care of themselves. And I think your big part is you want jobs that people can take pride in. They still don't qualify for every federal program that's out there. And I think this is a step in the right direction. So I support raising it to $10.10 an hour.
Immigration reform is an issue that's important to Iowa, but one that has stalled in Congress. Are there immigration reforms that you would support?
Yes, I think immigration is an issue where I think we do need to do something. I will just tell you right now, it's estimated that there are 13 million Americans that are undocumented, and is what I think we need to approach is packing people up and moving them out of the state, as some congressmen have proposed, including Steve King, isn't going to work. If you take a look at the raid on Postville, they spent hundreds of thousands of dollars for each person that they ended up deporting. I think we have to create a pathway to citizenship, and the way you create that pathway to citizenship is by allowing people to do community service, allowing them into programs like the AmeriCorps program or other programs like it, where if they do a certain amount of community service, that they're allowed the opportunity then to gain citizenship. I think one of the other things that they should be allowed to do, too, is military service as well. So I think there's a number of ways to create opportunities for those people that are currently here. And so I think that's one of the directions we need to go in. I supported the DREAM Act in the legislature about 10 or 11 years ago. We need to make sure that we make citizens that are people who are undocumented here in the United States the ability to get citizenship within the in this country and to be able to do it over a period of time, whether it's even years.
The proposed changes to the renewable fuel standard seem to signal that the Obama administration may be moving away from grain-based alternatives to conventional fuels. What could you do in Washington to work in a bipartisan manner on energy policy that would benefit Iowans but still have national appeal?
Well, quite frankly, what we're doing in Iowa does have national appeal. If you take a look at what's going on currently, ethanol has become the, quite frankly, the major fuel standard in the country. And I think the big reason why is MTBE, which is an oxidizer that's used in gasoline, leachates out of tanks, and states like New York and California are now building ethanol plants to address the need. So quite frankly, that fuel standard needs to remain there. Plus, I was on the cutting edge of most of the areas that are already being looked at, whether it's solar, wind, as well as ethanol and soy diesel. I was been on the front end of this for about the last 8 to 10 years, and I continues to be on the front end of it. We need to continue the tax credits for these types of fuels. And the other part too is the other part we've got to move into is the area of making sure that cars continue to use less fuel, and that they're based more on whether it's solar or but cutting down on our fuel standards, or not cutting down on our fuel standards, increasing our fuel standards so that we get more efficiency in them. So that's where I'm at, and I think I was on the front end of most of the things that are being done at the federal level. So they really shouldn't be changing the fuel standard. I would support the current tax credit and not allow it to be repealed.
Nearly every candidate that's running for office says they want to cut government waste and bring down the national deficit. Can you name a program or department you would cut?
Well, I think, quite frankly, if you're going to be looking at cutting the federal budget, the first thing you have to do is you have to be willing to look at everything in the legislature. We have always looked at programs to see if you can make them more efficient. And I think that's the first thing you need to do, where you can make programs more efficient. But you got to be careful of what you're cutting, because I think the whole issue that's coming up currently with the VA administration is a prime example of where if you don't have enough government oversight, you fail in the services that you should provide in the first place, especially to our veterans since they've served our country. So I think people have got to be careful about what they talk about. I think you can look at the defense budget, see if there's areas there where we can find cost savings. But the other part, too, is looking at finding it being done in a smart way versus just saying that you want to cut. I know Governor Branstad in the legislature proposed cutting early childhood when he was running for governor in 2010. Shortly after he got into office, he found out it was one of the most popular programs in all of our education system. So I don't think you can just go in and say, I'm going to eliminate a particular program. I think you need to focus on finding efficiencies in government and moving forward with those efficiencies to save taxpayers' dollars. And I have a long record of doing that in the legislature.
Interesting that you mentioned cutting national defense, because my next question was, are we spending enough on national defense?
Well, I think the big part with national defense is we have become a much more sophisticated country in the area of national defense, whether it's the whole issue of using drones or using smart technology so that you actually are using technology to benefit our country and our national security. And I think that's the area where we need to continue to focus on in defense, making sure that we get the most advanced technology. There's certain things that you're never going to replace the human element from. But when you take a look at national security and what we've been able to do, especially in the last 6 to 8 years, we've got new advanced technologies, whether it's drones, whether it's smart technology that we are being able to use that cuts down on the human casualties of war. And especially when you're seeing troops coming back with PTSD, we need to see what we can do to advance the technology within the Defense Department so that we do not have the human tragedies that we have coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan with our veterans currently.
And my last question, according to figures from NASA, 97% of climate scientists agree that climate warming trends over the past century are very likely due to human activities, and most of the leading scientific organizations worldwide have issued public statements endorsing that position. First, do you believe the science?
I believe the science. I believe that climate change is real. I can't believe there's only 97% of scientists that say that man is, has, I think it's 100%, or should be 100%. But I'll just tell you right now, we have real issues both with the climate change in this country, plus you have the whole federal lawsuit where the Marshall Islands are currently suing both China and the United States because that is literally islands out in the Pacific Ocean that are expected to go underwater in the next 50 years, primarily due to the polar ice caps melting. So I think we do need to deal with this, and this goes back to our energy policy of cutting down on coal-fired plants, switching to either nuclear or also looking at hydro, putting everything on the table to see if we can address those needs, especially in the areas of what we can do with wind and solar, and to also cut down on our carbon footprint when it comes to gas emissions. So I think this ties into some of the earlier questions, but it is a real science. I think it's a real issue. And if we want to leave this planet in a better in better condition than we as people came to be here in this country, we need to make sure that we improve how we deal with the issues of the science and what we're doing for to prevent global warming. I think the best example I can use is we do have the ability to do this. I tell my 12-year-old grandson, and he is shocked when I told him that when I was his age, I never saw a bald eagle in this country, and it was. It was due to a number of things, but due to DDT and numerous other chemicals, we almost wiped out the eagle population. And you look at where it is today. My grandson is able to see bald eagles on a regular basis, not just during the winter, but throughout the year here in Iowa. And I think one of the things that we need to continue to keep a focus on is protecting our environment, making sure it's there for our children, so that someday, maybe hopefully, my grandson will be my age and saying, I remember when my grandfather told me about the fact that someday there would be no North Pole because we had melted the polar ice caps and that didn't happen. And so I think that's something we have to keep a real focus on.
Representative Murphy, that's all my questions. Thanks so much for your time.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. You have a great day now.